أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. الحمد لله رب العالمين، وصلى الله على محمد وآله الطيبين الطاهرين المعصومين، واللعن الدائم على أعدائهم أجمعين. Dear viewers, السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. In our previous session, I talked about prescriptivism. According to prescriptivism, a moral statement is a statement that is universalizable. If you are able to universalize a moral statement, then you can rightly claim that it is a moral statement. But if you are not able to universalize it, if you are not able to apply it generally, universally, then you cannot claim that it is in a moral judgment or a moral statement. Then according to this school of thought, morality is based on universality. If you say that you ought to do this, then according to this school, it must be universalized in this way. Let everyone do this do the same in similar cases. Let everyone do the same in similar cases. This is how they universalize a moral statement. But how can one universalize a moral statement? Or how can you reach the stage of universality? There are different kinds of statements. How can you test it? Or how can you test them whether or not they are universal? There is a methodology suggested by this school of thought. If you exercise this methodology, then you will be able to reach the stage of universality, and you will find out as to whether or not a statement is universal. And that methodology is called coherence or consistency methodology. If you want to be logically consistent, then you must pass a moral judgment. A moral judgment is a universal judgment based on the methodology of consistency. What does consistency talk about? There are two rules for consistency. Consistency is represented by two rules. The first rule says that make similar evaluation for similar cases. Be impartial and be informed. If you are impartial and if you are informed, you will produce a similar evaluation for similar cases. If a person commits an error while driving, he will be fined by the officer. But if the same mistake or if the same violation is committed by another person, again the same thing must be done to him because the situation is the same. The same situation requires the same evaluation. So the first law tells you make similar evaluation for similar cases. Your evaluation must not vary from situation to situation if the situations are the same, if the cases are the same. This is the first law. The second law tells you, keep your moral beliefs, keep your moral principles in harmony with your practices. Keep your moral principles in harmony with how you live and how you want others to live. If you abide by this principle, and if you also abide by the previous principle, then of course you have abided by the law of consistency. You have respected the law of consistency. And of course, if you violate any one of these rules, if you neglect any one of these rules, then of course you cannot claim that you are logically consistent. Now let us apply these two rules and find out how we can reach universality based on these two rules. Let's talk about stealing your neighbor's computer. You might say that I believe I ought to steal my neighbor's computer. I ought to steal my neighbor's PC. The first law of consistency that tells you that makes similar evaluation for similar cases requires you to tell that I believe if the situation is exactly reversed, I believe that my neighbor ought to steal my computer. In the previous statement, you were saying that you believe that you ought to steal your neighbor's computer. But the consistency rule tells you that if the situation is reversed completely, if the situation is reversed exactly, then you must say that you believe that your neighbor ought to steal your computer. In the first sentence, you believed that you ought to steal your neighbor's computer. But in the second sentence, you believe that your neighbor ought to steal your computer. This is what the consistency rule requires you to do. But now let us go to the second rule. The second rule tells us, keep your moral beliefs in harmony with your practices. Now, if we want, or if we keep our moral beliefs in harmony with our practices, now let us apply the second consistency rule. What does the second consistency rule tell us to do? It tells us, keep your moral beliefs in harmony with your practices. Keep your moral principles in harmony with how you live and how you want others to live. If you apply this rule, what will happen? You will say that I desire that my neighbor would steal my computer. I desire that my neighbor would steal my PC. Now we can focus on this sentence. You have expressed your desire that your neighbor would steal your computer. Are you serious? Are you really serious about this? If you are serious, you seem to be crazy, because a healthy person, a wise person, never makes such a desire. He never desires that his neighbor would steal his computer, because he loves his computer. He does not like his computer to be stolen by his neighbor. Therefore, if you develop such a desire, you must hesitate about your health. You must doubt about your mental capacity. And of course, if you do not develop such a desire, if you do not have such a desire, then there will be no consistency. The consistency rule requires you to produce a similar evaluation for similar cases. You are like your neighbor. You are similar to your neighbor. When you say about your neighbor that you desire to steal his computer, then you can say the same thing to your neighbor. Your neighbor, you may also say that I desire that my neighbor would steal my computer. This is the requirement of the second law of consistency. And based on these two laws, and by applying these two laws, we will reach a universal rule and a universal principle. And that universal rule, that universal principle would be our moral principle. This is how we can reach universality. But tonight we are going to criticize this school of thought. We are going to touch the objections that are raised against this school of thought. As previous school of thought, this school of thought has also been heavily criticized by its opponents and by moral scholars. Of course, we will not be able to touch all the objections raised against this school of thought, but we will suffice to touching some of the most important objections that are raised against this school of thought. The first objection, and that is the most important objection against this school of thought, is that this school is like the previous school of thought, is based on logical positivism. The previous school of thought was, of course, emotivism. We talked that emotivism is based on logical positivism, because according to emotivism, moral statements can be reduced to exclamations. Moral statements do not carry any meanings. They are not meaningful because they are not analytic, nor are they empirical, and therefore they are exclamations. The previous school of thought was based on logical positivism, and we criticized the previous school of thought because of basing itself on logical positivism. And moral scholars have raised the same objection in regard with prescriptivism. Prescriptivism has also based itself on logical positivism. And now, since logical positivism is dead, and since logical positivism is no longer alive, therefore, we can say that whatever is based on such a foundation, that will also be shaky, that will also be very much weak and not reliable. You see, logical positivism was saying that all meaningful statements were either empirical or analytic. According to them, any meaningful statement could not lie outside of these two kinds of statements. If a statement is empirical, and if it can be tested by experiments, then of course it is meaningful. It can be trusted, and it can be relied on. But if a statement is not actually empirical, then it must be analytic. If it is neither empirical nor analytic, then such a statement is not worth talking about. Such a statement is of no use, because such a statement, according to positivists, is meaningless. It is neither empirical nor analytic. Therefore, it has to be abandoned, it has to be put aside, and it has to be overlooked, because it does not have any sense and it does not make any sense. But of course, we said that this school of thought is self-contradictory. This school of thought is self-refuting. Because if this school of thought is right, it would refute itself. It would reject itself. Because according to this school, all meaningful statements are either empirical or analytic. But we ask this school of thought as to whether your theory is empirical or analytic. When you say that all statements are either analytic or empirical, this is a statement. Is this statement empirical or analytic? Of course, such a statement is neither analytic nor empirical. When it is neither analytic nor empirical, how can you say that all meaningful statements are either empirical or analytic? So according to your evaluation, according to your presentation, your theory must be wrong. Your theory must be rejected. So when a theory rejects itself, when a theory is self-rejecting, when a theory is self-refuting, when a theory is self-contradictory, then it cannot be relied upon. It cannot be accepted. It cannot be taken into account. So therefore, we concluded that logical positivism is of no value. And when logical positivism is rejected, of course, whatever is based on logical positivism, that is also rejected. That can also be rejected. Because when the substructure is destroyed, the structure will also be destroyed. If the infrastructure is destroyed, then the structure will also be destroyed. Prescriptivism is a structure for the logical positivism as a substructure. When logical positivism collapses, then as a result, the structure that is based on it will also collapse. And as a result, we will have nothing as prescriptivism. So that is a very serious objection that is raised by moral scholars against this school of thought. Second, this school of thought, the theory produced by this school of thought, confronts our common sense. The theory presented by prescriptivism runs counter to our common sense. What does your common sense tell you? What is the product of your common sense? Your common sense tells you that moral statements are based on facts. Moral statements are based on realities. Odd judgments are based on facts. Your common sense tells you that odd judgments state facts. And it is because of this that investigators, researchers, attempt and struggle day and night in order to find out the truths about morality. They leave no stone unturned in order to discover the realities about morality. They make every attempt to discover the truths about morality. So their researches, their investigation presuppose the existence of truths. Were there no truths, they would not launch any investigation. Were there no facts, they would not carry out any research. Their research is based on this presumption that there are facts. Their research is based on this principle that there are realities. Realities are there. But these realities, these facts are ignored by prescriptivists. Because prescriptivists say that moral statements represent no facts. Moral statements state no facts. Whereas the researchers, the scholars, are of the view that there are facts around which moral statements rotate. If there is no fact, there will be no moral investigation. There will be no moral research. The very existence of moral research indicates that these realities, these facts exist, and they are accessible. If you research, if you work hard, if you work day and night, you will be able to discover those realities one day. Even philosophers, scholars in the past, as well as in the present, have been trying to reach such realities, and some of them have succeeded in reaching these goals. So the second objection tells us that prescriptivism is contrary to our common sense. And since we cannot leave aside our common sense, therefore we cannot accept prescriptivism. Since we cannot ignore our common sense, therefore we cannot accept prescriptivism. Whatever is contrary to our common sense, that is deniable, that can be denied. And whatever is opposed to our common sense, that cannot be accepted. So our common sense is very important. Whatever judgment you make, whatever statement you make, you must try that your statement must be in harmony with our common sense. Your judgment must be in consistency with our common sense. If you ignore your common sense, you must not expect that we will accept your judgments. If you overlook our common sense, you must not expect that we accept your theory. And now, since this school of thought is in opposition with our common sense, therefore we cannot accept this school of thought. Third, this school of thought emphasizes too much on consistency. Every now and then it says, we must respect consistency, and we must reach consistency. They say if we violate the principle of consistency, we will reach nowhere. It is our guiding principle. But in response, moral scholars say that first of all, consistency is not a very urgent principle. Sometimes you need to respect such a principle. At other times, you don't need to exercise such a principle. For example, sometimes your interest requires you to do certain things. You do it not because of consistency. You do it because of your interests. You want to reach your interests, and because of this, you do it. So, in such cases, your interest is very much important. It is your interest that is determining. It is your interest that matters. It is not consistency that matters. It is rather your interest that matters, and that is very much important. So firstly, consistency is not always important. Of course, sometimes it is important. If you observe it, it will be so good. But there are cases where you cannot respect this principle. And if you are not able to respect this principle, nothing will go wrong. You would say that my interests require me to go to other directions. My interests require me to change my methodology. So your interest is also important. Secondly, if consistency is very much important, if we need to observe it very necessarily, then we must say that there are cases where the opponents of prescriptivists would say that they have not violated the principle of consistency. Prescriptivists were saying, and they were very proud of their saying, that they were able to reject racism. They were able to reject Nazism. They were saying that based on consistency, we can convince Nazism and we can reject them very much easily. But here we would like to say that it is not very much easy to reject Nazism on the basis of consistency. It is not very easy to reject it on the basis of harmony. Because a Nazi, a racist, would tell us that I have not violated any law of consistency. Because he says, I'm superior to others. My race is superior to others. So the cases are not similar. Our case is different from other cases. Our race is different from other races. Our blood is different from other bloods. Our color is different from others' colors. So the cases are not of the same kind. The cases are of different kind. When the cases are of different kind, how can you produce a similar judgment for different cases? Of course, if the cases are the same, you must make similar evaluation, similar judgment for similar cases. This is what the consistency rule tells us to do. But here, the racist says the cases are different. Our race is superior to others. We are different from others. And since we are different from others, our morality is also different from others. We can kill others, but others are not allowed to kill us. We can enslave others, but others are not allowed to enslave us. We can pursue others, but others are not allowed to do this to us. So the principle that says that treat others as you like to be treated, this principle cannot be applied because we are different from others. So this is also a criticism, an objection that can also be raised against this school of thought. And that is all for tonight. Thank you very much.